Hey everyone, this is Josh, the pastor at Church on the Drive. Welcome or welcome back to the Church on the Drive podcast. Hey, at the end of this episode, please take a moment to subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on Facebook or Instagram. These are the easiest ways to share our content with a friend, and it's the easiest way to stay up to date with what's happening at Church on the Drive. Most importantly, though, I hope the following presentation inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Enjoy. You know, when I was a teenager, and even into college, I really played a lot of sports, a lot of them. I still love sports, I just can't play them for very long because my old man knees start yelling at me for it. You know what I mean? It was one of those things. I realized this not long ago, but I've always loved sports. And as a kid, I would play sports all the time. You know, as a child, you know, you're playing for fun, at least for bragging rights with your family or with your friends in the neighborhood or at school. But as you get a little bit older, things get a little bit more intense than that, right? A little bit more intense than that. It goes from being fun to being a little bit more stressful. I remember getting into middle school, or what we used to call junior high. You remember 7th and 8th grade? That was the first actual, this is now the time when it gets a little bit stressful. This is when it matters a little bit more. It's organized school ball, right? So you have high school football, of course, but we had middle school football where I grew up. And so it's organized. You play against other middle schools from around the place. There's a whole thing going on. So it matters a little bit. And you got coaches there who are getting paid to be there. So it matters a lot to them, too. And I remember being in 7th grade, some of our first football practices. And we get out there, and we're just being 7th grade boys, right? 12 and 13-year-old boys doing a lot of stuff. Doing a lot of different things, not focusing on football as much. And all of a sudden, the head coach, who usually stayed with the 8th graders, comes over to the 7th grade, and he just starts ripping us up one side and down the other, right? He's just going after us. And he's using words I can't repeat here now, and I won't repeat after, so don't ask me. He starts saying stuff, and in the middle of it, he says, "Look, and he had a very, very thick southern accent, okay? So I'm going to do my best to impersonate. I know you can't tell, but I sometimes can get one. He says, "Let me tell y'all something." He said, "I know your mamas and daddies taught you that you were special. They taught you that you were special. And they gave you ice cream and popcorn and let you watch Nickelodeon all the time." As he's hiking his pants up while he's saying this, right? You can picture, like the old bike shorts, right? He's pulling this stuff up. He says, "Let me tell you something now. You're not special. You ain't special." And he looks right at me and says, "You ain't special, plant. You ain't special." I was like, "Well, my mama said I was, you know?" And his point was that none of us was special. None of us was different than the other. None of us had a license to do whatever we wanted to do because we were so used to mom and daddy letting us do what we wanted to do. And his words for that were, "If you want to be special, you go home and you can sit on your beanbag chair and eat ice cream." And that's what he said every time he got mad at you, so it got real old after a while. But something shifted for me that day. Like, it was different. Like, I always loved sports, and I always liked the idea of playing sports, but something came along and shifted, and it was my coach. He shifted this paradigm for me. Today, we're beginning a new series called But I Tell You, and it's about this whole episode where Jesus goes on the side of this hill, and he starts talking about things that everybody knew about. Like, he took very common understandings of things, very common ideas about things, and he said, "But I tell you." He'd say, "You have heard it said," and then he'd insert that thing, and he'd said, "But I tell you." And it's really hard, I think, for us to fully grasp how big of a statement this is when he does it, like the sheer audacity of it, because he's taken some things that seem to us just to be very religious, but they were also very social. Right, so As we begin today, I want to prep you for how huge this is, how big this is. This is a big statement when he says, "But I tell you," because he is totally shifting the paradigm. He's making it a little bit different than anything that everybody's ever done. And at first glance, it seems as if he's saying, these things that I'm talking about, those things are obsolete, and now I'm telling you something else. But what if he's not? What if he's just shifting that paradigm just a little bit? And there's something deeper and better and stronger that Jesus is calling the people of God to. See, because on this day, here's what happened. Jesus got up on the side of a hill. They call them mountains in Scripture, but they're really not mountains. They're just big hills. You know, you can see the same thing out in Claremont if you want to. They're big hills. There's a lot of rocks. He goes up on the side of this thing, and he calls his disciples, his followers to him, and he starts preaching. He starts talking about stuff, and he launches into this really long sermon that we often refer to as the Sermon on the Mount, and it is probably the greatest speech of all time, definitely the greatest sermon of all time, and he says some pretty incredible stuff, and he kicks off this sermon with some pretty incredible words, because everybody thinks they know who Jesus is. Right? We all think we have this great understanding of who Jesus is. They thought they knew who Jesus was at this point. He had said some inflammatory things. And so he starts off like this. He says, "Look, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them." That's interesting. That's interesting, because when we think about Jesus, a lot of times we think, oh, that's the Old Testament garbage. Jesus shows up, bleh, I'm done with that over there. Totally done with this over there. And it can be a little bit confusing because he says, look, I'm not doing away with all of that stuff. I'm not abolishing that. I've come to fulfill. I've come to fulfill. What Jesus means in this verse is that the story of Israel, as in the law and the prophets shows and speaks, the story of Israel is fulfilled and completed in him, Jesus. He says, I am the fulfillment, Jesus says. I am the fulfillment of this, myself. So in short, everything there that we find in what we call the Old Testament, or you may call the Hebrew Bible, let's give it this metaphor, is a small brushstroke on a larger canvas that holds a picture of Jesus. Every law, every prophecy, every jot, every tittle down in the law and the prophets, it's all a small brushstroke on the larger canvas of a picture of Jesus. Jesus is saying, I'm the fulfillment of all of that stuff, right? So his larger point is this, that he's revealing the true expression, the fuller expression of God's will for God's people. That's important to remember. He is revealing the true expression, the fuller expression of God's will for God's people. So he goes on, and he says this. He says, you have heard that it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder. So everybody can get on board with that, I hope, right? We all can. We're all on board with that. He says, you've heard it said, you shall not murder. That's a big one. This is the one he starts off with. Probably a safe bet. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. Fair enough, Jesus. We all get it. Keep in mind, religious law and civil law in that time period were married. They were totally together like this. You could not separate one from the other. So this is just as much a religious law as it is a civil law. I think we would all say the same for ourselves today, that like this idea of not murdering is as much as a religious thing for us as it is a civil thing. It's also a law that pretty much everybody around the world forever has gotten on board with. Because if you're just letting people murder all the time, well, you don't have a civilization left, do you? You don't have a civilization left. But even beyond that, I think we all have this image of God so imprinted on us that we know instinctively that something as terrible as murder is wrong, don't we? We know it's wrong. We know there's something that tears apart the soul. I mean, you even read about it in books like Harry Potter. Or if you're like me, you can just watch the movie and see this thing. You can read about this stuff. There's this one part where they're talking about murder, and I won't spoil anything for you if you've never read it, but he says, murder tears apart the soul. That's true. And so just for the sake of anybody who could be murdered, for the sake of the murderer, and for the sake of civilization, we've always known that murder is wrong. So as Jesus is saying, you have heard it said, don't murder. Everybody's on board with that. And then he says this, but I tell you. Well, where could he possibly go from there, right? Where do you go from there? Like, you've heard it said, don't murder. We all get on board with that. Your mama told you that. Your daddy told you that. Your grandma told you this. Everybody said this. And then he says, but I tell you. And you start to wonder if you're sitting there. Maybe you're in a death cult and you didn't know it. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Well, that took a turn, didn't it? Angry? Let's do a quick poll. Who in here has a sister or a brother? Who's ever been angry at them? Yeah, you're subject to judgment. Way to go. Way to go. Me too. Yeah. Well, he's talking about God's people when he's saying sister or brother, but he's making it a point to say sister or brother. He could just say a neighbor. He could just say somebody around you, a fellow Jew, something like that. He says a brother or sister. He's talking about the people of God within the kingdom of God in particular. He says, if you're angry with them, you're subject to judgment. Well, the same is true with murder, right? Like, you're going to be subject to judgment if you murder somebody, because if you murdered somebody, they got to bring you in front of the judge and maybe in front of a group of people, the elders of the area, and you got to figure this out. Is this murder? Does it count? And why did they murder? There are all sorts of considerations, because it could be that it wasn't murder, right? When we say murder, we're not meaning manslaughter. Like, I accidentally ran somebody over or something like that. And we're not meaning in a time of war. We're meaning I went after this person and tried to take their life. You know what's so interesting? When you think about it, pretty much every instance of murder you can think about, there's anger involved. Like, true, honest murder, there's some kind of anger involved in that. And so Jesus says, if you're angry with a brother or sister, you will be subject to judgment. Now remember, he's the fuller expression of God's will for God's people. Like, Jesus is revealing the deeper intent of this well-known, well-established law. He says there's something deeper than just not murdering people, right? The deeper intent here is this, that God's people should not be angry with each other, because anger ultimately leads to a lot of other stuff. So he doubles down. He says it this way. He says, look, again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, raka, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. So a couple things to break down there, right? So that word raka is an Aramaic term. That's the language that pretty much everybody in that region spoke at that time. That's an Aramaic term that means blockhead or idiot. Kids, don't tell your parents I said that. Right? It's a mean, nasty thing to say to somebody. And in that era, at that time, and in that place, names meant a lot more than they mean now. We walk around saying stuff like, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. You called somebody a name back then, you better be ready to go. Because names meant so much more to them. In fact, when they named each other, when they named their kids, the names always had a deep, great meaning, and you were supposed to aspire to that name. My name, for instance, means Joshua. It comes from the Bible, and it means the Lord saves, right? I wonder, I had to look that up. I learned it in seminary, but so don't be impressed by that. But I wonder how many of us know the meanings of our name, just right off the top of your head. Everybody back then knew the meaning of their name, and they aspired to fulfill whatever felt prophetic about it. So if you called somebody a blockhead or an idiot or something like that, you were questioning their very personhood. You're getting deep at their dignity, and they were ready to fight over something like that. This was a big deal. You call somebody a fool, that's a big deal. And when you're doing those things, you're forcing anger upon another person. Like you're taking out your anger on somebody else in a way that elicits an angry response and potentially exacerbates the situation and makes it worse than it ever should have been. Jesus says, if you're doing that, you are in danger of the fire of hell. In fact, what it says literally in the Greek here is the fires of Gehenna. Gehenna was kind of the town dump where they burned all their refuse from Jerusalem. And it became a metaphor for the place of judgment and doom in the Jewish world. So you'll be in danger of this doom judgment if you're doing these things. Again, God's people aren't supposed to be angry with each other. They're supposed to figure it out. They're supposed to work together. You're not supposed to be doing this sort of thing. But let's be real. We all raised our hand a second ago. Those of you with brothers and sisters, those of you who've ever lived with anyone else, if you've ever loved anyone else, you know this to be true. They're going to make you angry, aren't they? They probably made you angry this morning. They're going to make you angry because that's just the nature of life. That's just kind of what happens. No matter how much you love someone, you can't make them do what you want, so they end up making you mad. Jesus has a plan for that. Jesus has a plan for that. He goes on, he says it this way. Therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there, remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, and then come and offer your gift. You may not know this about me, but I don't go to Disney or Universal or SeaWorld or any of those places. Yeah. That's right. Give me all your hate. I'm here for it. The main reason is I don't like standing in line for things. I really just despise it so much. I don't want to go stand doing it. You can talk to me about fast passes. You can talk to me about ultra fast gold standard passes, whatever there is out there. I'm not doing it. I'm also a cheapskate, so I'm not going to do it. I will show up for something else of far less value if I don't have to stand in line. In these days, when Jesus and his compatriots were going to the temple to worship, they often had to bring a sacrifice or a gift up to the altar, right? That was what was expected of them. And usually there was going to be a line. Can you imagine standing in a line at Disney or SeaWorld or Universal, and that's the way you had to worship? Like, you got to worship and then go ride a roller coaster or something. But you had to bring your gift up there and place it there right in front of the priest. And that was part of the way you worshiped. Imagine you're in one of those long lines. Even with the fast pass, you're there in the long line. You get up kind of close to the front, and there's Jesus whispering to you. Bobby has a problem with you. Why don't you leave that here and go make it right and then come back and get in line and try again? I'm not getting back in this line, Jesus. Not many of us want to do that, do we? Now, luckily, we're not making anybody stand in line to sing and to praise here in this church, but the point remains the same. We think of worship as this beautiful, wonderful moment where we get to connect with the God of the universe. And if you think that, you're 100% right. You get to connect with God. But what we see here in these verses is that you can't do this relationship with God if this relationship with people is messed up. That this relationship with God that we sometimes think is vertical is just as much horizontal as it is vertical. If you can't get right with the people around you, if you can't love the people around you well, if you can't treat them well, how dare you come before their creator and act as if everything is okay? No, man, you can't trash the creation and then go love the creator. That's not how it works. If you come to me to talk to me about how messed up my kids are, right? If you're yelling at my children out back somewhere and screaming at them and telling them something, you're angry at them and making them cry, and then you come to talk to me, better go somewhere else. I ain't having that. And you better hide because Camille will catch you. And yet, so many of us are willing to say mean, hurtful, and spiteful things and then go and pray somewhere. God, would you help me do this? God, would you help me this? I wonder what God thinks. I don't know. It's not written down anywhere, and I don't have a special revelation about it, but I wonder what God thinks when we've been mean and nasty to somebody, and then we go to God and say, God, I love you so much. Thank you for this day. I wonder. In the fulfillment of the story of Israel, anger towards God's people, towards anyone really, needs to be settled. So here's the bottom line of everything I want you to remember today. What I need you to walk away with remembering is this. Making peace honors God. Making peace honors God. Some of us, we get in there and we go, I got this righteous indignation about this thing. We have made ourselves believe in righteous anger. Like, I need to come up and say something, like in the Old Testament when they did that. But remember, Jesus is the fulfillment of all of that. And he says to make peace. He says to get it right. Making peace is what ultimately honors God, isn't it? Now, some of us, we'll be at odds with somebody else about something, and we don't want to get out of line and start to go do the worship. Instead, we come up with reasons why we shouldn't get out of line and go make things right with them and go reconcile with them. We come up with all kinds of reasons. One of those reasons is that we've been taught that it isn't very Christian to bring it up, right? It happened. Let's just move on. Let's don't say anything. It isn't Christian to air this out any longer. Now, sometimes, you're right. It's little stuff, like they got the parking spot that you wanted as you were rolling in here. And I know you were all trying to get the front parking spot, right? Or somebody else got a promotion at work that you really wanted. And you felt like they had said something about you and you wanted to air it out. And you're like, you know what? No big deal. I need to go work somewhere else. Anyways. Like sometimes it's not totally worth it. That's just little stuff. Sometimes it's big enough that we've got to deal with these things. If there's actual anger and malice in our heart towards people, something has to be dealt with. There's actual anger and malice within our heart towards somebody. Like we want bad things to happen and we're willing to go talk about somebody else to somebody else because of it. We got to handle that. We got to deal with that. And the place it starts is by talking to the person that we're angry at or they're angry at us. And we can't keep ourselves from that just because we feel like it's unchristian. Friends, Jesus was confrontational all the time. All the time. He said stuff all the time. And maybe you're like, look, I'm not a confrontational person. Okay. Jesus was. Jesus is. When I say confrontational, I don't mean you got to go in and be mean, nasty, or anything like that. I don't mean you got to go be angry and ranting and raving either. But it is getting in front of somebody and saying, hey, this is going on. I'd like to talk to you about it. Most people are receptive to that, but they're not always. Now, some of us, we don't go do this because we just don't want the headache. Right, count me in that group. Like sometimes I'm just going to move on. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'll just move on, whatever. But that's not healthy either. I just stay mad and I hold a grudge. And then God's people are angry at each other. One of the ones I see happen a lot, though, one of the reasons that we don't end up having these conversations around our conflict is because we don't have the guts. We just don't have the guts. It makes us too nervous to come in and say, hey, I know you're upset with me or I'm upset with you. It makes us too nervous. And we'll talk a big game, but when the time comes, we won't do it. If that's you, can I give you some loving advice? Grow up. Grow up. With all the love of Jesus in my heart, grow up. It's time to be a big boy and a big girl. It's time to go in and say, hey, look, this is going on. And here's how you start that conversation, not from a place of anger, not from a place of pride, from a place of humility. You walk in and you say, there's something going on here that needs to be fixed, And I love you so much that I'm willing to come and do it. Let's do this. I'm willing to be uncomfortable right now. That's really what it boils down to, right? Are you allowing that person to matter enough to you to fix this situation? Friends, people matter more than your ego. People matter more than your anger. People matter more than your feelings. Do you love them enough? That's what God is after. That's why Jesus doesn't want there to be anger between God's people, because people matter more. When we talk about anger, again, we're not meaning small-ish things all the time, right? Although I do think we should handle more things than we do, we're talking about things that linger in our hearts, that just stay there, and we say, that bugs me. That person bugs me all the time. That's not what God is after. He wants more for you. Your life will be better if you eliminate the anger between and the animosity between you and others, and you try to make peace in every part of your life. Listen, I've got those people in my life that it seems almost impossible that we'll ever make peace. Because sometimes you'll go to people and you'll say, hey, I'd like to make peace, and they'll say, no, thank you. In that situation, in that moment, you've done your duty. But try to go back with somebody else that they respect and say, look, I want to make this right. And if they won't receive you, here's what you do. Set a boundary. Like, okay, I tried. And pray for them earnestly. In real prayer. I want you to pray for that person, pray for their good, pray that God opens their eyes, and pray that you get an opportunity to speak to them about this thing. You've tried your best. God can honor that. You planted a seed for that. And you can do it. Sometimes you got to set that boundary. So maybe this morning you're here and it's time for us to take inventory a little bit. It's time for us to take a little bit of inventory. Maybe you're here this morning and you're thinking through like, okay, I've got that relationship here and that one here. Or maybe you're all good with everybody. I don't know. But my hunch is that many of us, we walk through life with some of these fragmented relationships, and they've got to be made right. I'd love to encourage you and challenge you to make them right, to make peace as soon as you possibly can. All it's going to do is improve your life and improve their life, and probably improve the lives of those around you. It's not an easy thing I'm asking you to do. It's a difficult thing to do. But following Jesus isn't easy. Would you let me pray for you? God, I thank you that you made peace with us. So as we begin this morning to wrestle with this idea that we've got to make peace with others, I pray that you would help us to be thankful for the peace that you have made with us. In spite of like our sin and in spite of all the stuff that we've done, I pray that you would give us gratitude, that you would give us great and deep gratitude for what you've done in us. I pray for my sisters and my brothers and even for myself, that if there's relationships in our life that need to be fixed, that need to be mended, where peace needs to be made, I pray that you would give us the strength. I pray that you would give us the courage. Bring people around us to spur us on to have that direction. But we know following you isn't easy, but it's the best possible way to live. Give us the strength. In the name of Jesus, who is the Christ, amen.